through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, we are getting you guys primed and ready for Seahawks training camp, which kicks off later this month, by telling you the 15 most important, most interesting Seahawks heading into training camp. These guys are going to have a huge impact on whether or not this team can get to a Super Bowl this season. So now we've started with Carlos Dunlap. We've had Jordan Brooks, but we have a two-for-one deal this time. Two-for-one because we're looking at a very important position for the Seattle Seahawks. So the most important Seahawks countdown continues today with number 12, Gabe Jackson and Damian Lewis.
Counting down to the most interesting Seahawk on the 2021 roster with Jake and Stacy. Number 12.
All right. So Gabe Jackson, 30 years old. He spent his entire career with the Raiders before the Seahawks used one of just four draft picks to acquire him via trade this last offseason. Now, that trade comes a year after they used a third round pick in 2020 to take LSU guard Damian Lewis. And there are a few big questions for both of these guys, Jake, which is why we've paired them together. And I'm going to throw these questions to you and you're going to take us away with this preview. But it starts with things like, hey, with Gabe Jackson here, where does he play? And do you move Damian Lewis around? How good of an improvement can Gabe Jackson be in an offseason where your quarterback, Russell Wilson, very publicly talked about his desire to be hit less, to take fewer sacks, and knowing that your offense is going to have a new offensive coordinator, how important that protection is going to be. The offensive line is going to be a huge talking point, and one of the lingering questions will be whether they did enough. So, Jake, not only did they do enough, but tell us what we need to know about Gabe Jackson, Damian Lewis, and their odds of making the Seahawks a Super Bowl team in 2021.
Yeah, the reason why we put the two guys that are going to be in charge of holding down the guard spots for this offensive line, Gabe Jackson, Damian Lewis, is because arguably outside of left tackle, these are the two most important spots on the offensive line. And you want to know another reason why this is a top 15 most important need for the team and for these two guys? They are vital to this team's success. Let's go to down to memory lane. Let's go to cut number 13 here and Aaron Donald talk about who he wanted to play heading into the playoffs.
You'll play the Seahawks in the first round of the playoffs.
That's what we wanted. That's exactly what we wanted.
You want to know, so if you didn't hear that, Aaron Donald said, that's who we wanted. It's exactly who we wanted. You want to know why it's exactly who they wanted, Stacy? Because if you're Aaron Donald and you're going up against this offensive line and what you played pretty much your entire career in the interior, you've been able to establish yourself as one of the best defensive players in all of football, because you've been able to rack up some serious stats up against the Seattle Seahawks, and in particular last year.
Yikes.
I mean, you look at Aaron Donald, what they were able to do against this Seahawks offensive line in the playoff game, it wasn't pretty. Now, there were lots of other things that were going wrong as a group with the Seahawks offense,
right.
So it's not
turnovers.
To put all the blame on them, not in any stretch, but that's a big piece of it. And so Gabe Jackson, Damian Lewis, these two guys, in terms of the job that they will be tasked with in terms of trying to slow down Aaron Donald, trying to slow down a great defensive pass rush within your own division, these two guys are going to be key of keeping Russell Wilson upright, keeping him protected, and allowing this offense to take off under Shane Waldron. And you look at what Gabe Jackson and Damian Lewis can be, it's very exciting for this team. Gabe Jackson is one of the better guards in football, had 2 years in 2018 and 19 with some injuries that would make you concerned, but he played all of 2020. John Gruden last year, we played some sound of him famously saying he's one of the best guards in football, and I wouldn't want anybody else on my team. They then go fast forward and trade him to the Seattle Seahawks. But Gabe Jackson will really bring some veteran presence. He'll bring nastiness. He'll bring toughness. And a couple years ago, I watched some film of him play against the Rams and Aaron Donald. Him and Aaron Donald got into a couple scraps. And I love seeing that in between plays. Why? Because Aaron Donald wasn't getting his way. And B, Gabe Jackson was not intimidated by Aaron Donald. So bringing some of that toughness, bringing some of that talent to this interior is a welcomed addition. And then the guy that I think has tremendous upside, that has the ability to become maybe even a Pro Bowler this year, and Damian Lewis, he had a great rookie campaign, and I thought he was off to a fantastic start. hit that rookie wall kind of in the second half of the season that no one really wants to talk about. Wasn't stellar in the second half of the season, but I think that that isn't a surprise for young rookies in the league. No matter what position you play, I have high expectations, high hopes for Damian Lewis moving over to the left side, being next to Dwayne Brown at the left guard position. And here, you know, you go to Mark Schlereth, a guy who has played the game, who understands offensive line play at the highest level, and cut number nine. Here's what he had to say about Damian Lewis.
Let me tell you, he is dominant, and he's got some nasty to him. I mean, I've seen him go straight, put a guy on his back, and then go straight Earl Grey over his face mask, you know? So he's got some nasty to him. He plays that way. He's physical at the point of attack. And to be able to pop in and just play center like that, like, that is a really hard thing to do.
So you look at what Damian Lewis was able to do and some of the things that he was asked. I mean, he was fantastic, and I think he was a real upgrade. And when you talk about offensive line acquisitions over the Seahawks' tenure, over you know the past 5-6 years, mm-hmm. it's not been great, but they definitely nailed it with Damian Lewis with the third-round selection last year coming out of LSU. And I love this also, Gabe Jackson coming in as a veteran player, coming in as a position where Damian Lewis, that's his goal. He's trying to get to the level of career, maybe even surpass what Gabe Jackson has been able to accomplish in this league. Cut number eight, Gabe Jackson asked the advice that he would give Damian Lewis.
I mean, just keep getting better. You know, let your learn from your past. Don't make the same mistakes. The biggest thing just is self-improvement. You know, I know it's a big jump out of me and a lot of players from year one and year two. And, I mean, I'm excited for him because I love the way he plays. He's to me, he's going to definitely be a great player. And I love his, you know, his attitude and demeanor towards the game.
So, Stace, I love the fact that you're comboing two guys that are going to upgrade your interior on your offensive line. Damian Lewis moving over to left guard, Gabe Jackson now to right guard. But now you have a young star at the position, mm-hmm. learning from one of the older veterans that has been great at this position and continues to still play at a high level at 30 years old. I love that combination. I love the mentorship that can be there, a positive mentorship that can take place. And I'm really excited about what this group can be. Now having Dwayne Brown as your clear leader, adding a veteran guy who's got some serious leadership qualities to him in Gabe Jackson, and then adding Damian Lewis, obviously of last year, who is a tough-nosed player and showed a lot of promise his rookie season.
Now, Dwayne Brown has spent the last couple years playing next to left guard Mike Iupati, who is obviously an experienced guy who dealt with some injuries but overall had a lot of veteran savvy, at least knew his job. He'd been in the league for plenty long enough. Now, does Dwayne Brown's job get easier or tougher playing next to a guy that's younger or healthier but mm-hmm. less experienced?
I think it makes it easier because Damian Lewis is a very talented player. I think that when you talk about chemistry, one of the things that's going to be very important is having a guy that you can rely on that's going to be there and be healthy. First and foremost, Mike Iupati was not able to be that guy over the course of his time here in Seattle. The second part is I think Damian Lewis is a quick learner. He's a quick study. Mm-hmm. And what you saw often from Dwayne Brown last year, okay, and this is part of the reason where, you know, you talk about improving your offensive line. Dwayne Brown had an excellent year at left tackle when it was just him isolated as an individual, one-on-one pass protection. But when it came down to having to work through twists and stunts and all those things with the guy next to him, there were often times, far too often, where you saw Dwayne Brown after the play really frustrated because they did not pass off those responsibilities good enough. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that there was not enough chemistry or not enough trust with the guy next to him to adequately, you know, pull that off. Any great offensive lineman will tell you that. Any analyst of offensive line play will tell you how important that aspect of it is. And so I think having a young player and an up-and-comer in Damian Lewis, I think those two are going to be paired very, very well together. I'm excited to see that work. And then you add Gabe Jackson, who will be a leader and a solidifier at the right guard position that will be able to help out Brandon Schell.
Now, where do these guys rank and how important they've become just because there's also a new offensive coordinator?
Well, that's a great question because you look at how these guys are going to fit. Both of these guys are more downhill attitude guys. Point of attack, they can move people.
Super strong.
But they're playing in a zone scheme with Shane Waldron. And I'll be curious to see how that comes together. They will be moving more side to side rather than getting downhill. And the one thing that we do know is Gabe Jackson played in that scheme under Tom Cable, mm-hmm. was able to do well. But these guys, their strength is getting downhill. Damian Lewis and Gabe Jackson. I'll be curious to see how Shane Waldron, Andy Dickerson, Mike Solari try to make little tweaks to the system where they can get those guys combo blocking, get them downhill a little bit more as they add that zone running scheme to it. Because you can't cup block anymore, and that's a big thing that hurt Tom Cable and his running scheme for many years here in Seattle. So that's going to be the thing that they've got to figure out. But I like both of these guys. I think they'll figure it out as an offensive brain trust mm-hmm. and get these guys in the best position to execute and play their game at a high level. But the big thing is not just in the run game, but in pass protection. Can they be improved? And I think with Gabe Jackson, the clear answer is yes. And with Damian Lewis, I think he's got to show improvement in that area, particularly against when he had to play against some of the better interior defensive linemen in the NFL.
Now, that's my last question here for you because we got about a minute, 2 minutes here. With Damian Lewis, you did mention, and I know we all saw this, a fantastic rookie season overall. Did slip a little bit in the second half of the year. Did anything you see concern you, or did you attribute most of it to, look, he's a rookie making rookie mistakes, and I have enough faith in what I saw in the first part of the year to make me think he can bounce back?
Yeah, it's more of the latter, Stacey. Okay. He has all the talent. What I saw from him in the second half of the season was not him being exposed, him not... you know, talent-wise, being able to get it done, it was more of a lot of technical mistakes that he was making along the way. And I think also, like I said before, you hit that rookie wall, becomes really difficult. And as he got into the second half of the season, the quality of play really ratcheted up as you were getting closer to playoff football, as you're getting to more meaningful football. And the scheme as a whole was not helpful or conducive to allowing Damian Lewis to have success as a young rookie. They were asking a lot of him in pass protection. So I think with a new scheme, a new system that's going to be geared around getting the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands quicker, finding ways to get that ball out and get those guys moving, I think will be really, really important overall for that group. It'll make them better. And these two guys, mm-hmm. there is an argument to be made that these two guys should be in the top 10. That's how important that interior of the offensive line is. That's how important Damian Lewis and Gabe Jackson's contributions can be for this team. But I think they make the 12 because when you look at as a whole, I believe that their group will be better inherently based off of the scheme. I also think that this group inherently will be better when you've added healthy bodies like Gabe Jackson, Damian Lewis. And I think there's a few guys on the defensive side of the ball that add a lot of value and are very, very important to this team's eventual success.
And we're going to be getting to those guys because our countdown is going to continue every single weekday. We kick it off at 1 p.m., the 1 p.m. hour, right at 1 p.m. We're going to continue our most important Seahawks countdown as we lead you guys up to Seahawks training camp. That was number 12, Gabe Jackson and Damian Lewis. Right now, it's time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Teela Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Mariners. They pick up a series victory against the Angels and also have now won 9 straight games started by Logan Gilbert.
Crazy.
What is the real headline?
Just as everyone predicted, the Mariners' 2 most consistent pitchers in July have been Logan Gilbert and Chris Flexen. I could have told you that. I mean, come on.
We all Obvious. Saw it coming.
Logan Gilbert threw 5 1/3 yesterday, allowed 4 hits, 2 earned runs, walked 2, and struck out 9. That 9 career high in strikeouts. It's been a fantastic last 2 outings for Gilbert. And one of the really important and interesting conversations that we will get to, certainly depending on Kikuchi's next outing, because Kikuchi used to be this guy. Kikuchi was your single Mariners All-Star this year. And Curtis, you pointed this out. We've been saying how easy of a decision is it for the Mariners to make to extend Kikuchi? Why would you never do this? And now we're thinking, well, wait a minute. Hang on a minute. That was
know.
When I was playing with house money.
That's why we get to be prisoners of the moment. We get to react
absolutely.
To what
I'm
we're seeing
GM.
Right now here in Sports Talk Radio. But yeah, I mean, Kikuchi right now, if he doesn't turn things around, what we saw from the last 2 starts, it is very, very concerning. But what we've seen from Logan Gilbert, I mean, has been fantastic. He has gotten better. He has shown promise. He has shown learning, that he is dominating the learning curve as he's gone along, that he has grown with every single moment and every single opportunity, and we are seeing new unique things that he is doing each and every single start. I hope he continues on that trajectory. It would be fantastic to go into 2022 with an established ace, a young established ace with Logan Gilbert. Chris Flexen, put some respect on his name. What he has done this year has been absolutely fantastic. I don't care that we haven't anticipated that this is who he would be. We got to get over that, because what he has done at home and now on the road has been very, very consistent, and his contract is so unbelievably cheap. If you look at it and dive into what it is going to be in 2022, and if he played well, and eventually 2023, massive, massive steal, massive find. I hope Chris Flexen keeps it rolling.
Headline rewrites.
NHL's protection lists have been made public, and big names like Montreal goalie Carey Price and St. Louis's Vladimir Tarasenko now available for selection by the Kraken on Wednesday. So what is the real headline?
No joke here. It's just a fact. Seattle might not take either of these guys. But the fun part is watching someone spend $80 million of someone else's money in 72 hours.
Oh, yes.
Who doesn't love that?
I saw somebody
love to see that
in my mentions this weekend. I forget who it was. Sorry. But they mentioned it was...
They were in my mentions, just a nobody.
It was... They said this is like the plot of the movie Brewster's Millions, where you got to spend X amount of dollars in a certain
That's
amount of time.
That's literally what it is. The Kraken literally have a requirement. That they have to have, your minimum 20 players under contract for next year. And also, salaries have to total minimum $48 million. Like, you literally have to spend that money.
It was a guy by the name of Nick Papagiorgio.
Nice. You can make a case for why they shouldn't take either Price or Tarasenko, but it sure is tempting to look at both of these guys. The latter, 29 years old, the former, a star goalie who waived his no-movement clause so that Montreal could then protect their backup goalie, and he's really tempting. He comes with a huge contract, but it sure is tempting.
It is tempting, but the two issues with these guys is serious injury concerns. I don't think you want to start out of the gate with those two guys being your stars or being a star of your team and not know if they're going to be able to contribute right away out of the gate. I think that's something that is concerning. And I also do think that there's something to be said about this team wanting to start their foundation and build the team their way and have players that meet the criteria that they have. You have to find good quality talent. I just don't know if it's going to come in the name of these two guys. And although it would be a lot of fun and there would be some great excitement around that, I just think that when you look at the Kraken, them having to spend $48 million, them spending potentially maybe $80 million in 72 hours, it's fun, it's exciting. And the thing that I can't get over is the fact that, look, we've had the Seattle Kraken, we've had these steps along the way, but you are going to legitimately have a team, a roster, guys to talk about, guys to dive into, and you're going to know very, very much of who this team is going to be, the style of play that they're going to want to play. As soon as you get this roster all filled out, it's going to be a lot of fun to dive into that.
Yeah, a couple of news items with the Kraken this afternoon. It looks like they're nearing an agreement with Florida Panthers goalie Chris Drieger, 3 years, $10.5 million deal. That probably won't get announced until the expansion draft. That
would
probably be the Kraken's pick for the Panthers. And then also this, which is a question we get a lot here on the text line and just on Twitter. When will the Kraken jerseys be made available? Well, Ryan S. Clark of The Athletic, who covers the Kraken, he says this: the Kraken plan on having players wear their home and away sweaters at the expansion draft on Wednesday, with the plan that they go on sale September 15th.
They're going to sell out so fast.
Circle
it's going to make me so mad.
Circle that date. About 2 months from now, Kraken sweaters likely to go on sale.
They'll be online, you think?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's going to be one of those things where you go...
This is the year 2021.
Refresh the cart and it's gone.
Sorry. Yeah. Maybe they go, guerrilla, warfare here.
You have to
be on the street. You have to be in the shop to go buy it, because the demand is going to be insane. I mean, it's going to be crazy. It's one of those things where you're going to have to get online immediately as soon as they make it available, or it's going to be gone.
I'm going to go in the children's section to look for them. Next time.
See, that's the advantage you have.
I know.
And the team account just confirmed it. So September 15th, jerseys are on sale.
Wow.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, the Bucks stunned the Suns by taking Game 5 in Phoenix, and they can close out the NBA Finals tomorrow night in Milwaukee. What is the real headline?
Much like myself, the sun is setting on Chris Paul's chances of getting a ring. Oh, no.
Stacey.
Oh, no.
Don't. Does it hurt any less the second time?
No, it was funnier.
You put it on yourself. No one's safe. You came after me. The only person you haven't come after yet on the headlines is Curtis.
Let's go.
I'll come up with something.
I think you're afraid.
No, I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I can go after C-Raj. I just haven't had anything yet.
I don't know.
Wait for the moment to present itself. It'll be here.
Now, in regards to this NBA Finals, it looked like the Suns were going to be off and rolling. Chris Paul comes back. It hasn't been that way. I mean, I'm not going to say that the team has suffered because of Chris Paul's return. That would be crazy. But Chris Paul hasn't lived up to the billing in terms of the standard he has set through the regular season and into the playoffs thus far. It's been interesting to watch Chris Paul so far in these NBA Finals. But I am not going to flip the script. I know Giannis has been fun. The Bucks have roared back to tie the series up. But I'm going to stick with the Suns. I'm going to stick with Chris Paul. I'm going to stick with Devin Booker. This is gut check time for the Suns. And they need to win this game or this is totally going to run away from them.
I am also going to stick with my team, the Bucks. I've been with them from day one. And I'm going to continue to stay by them. Roll the tape, Jake.
Front runner.
Curtis, did I not say, okay, I have switched allegiances. I have done that. But I have no true allegiances. Why wouldn't I want to root for the team that's winning? Come on.
I mean.
Come on.
It's Stacey's brand.
It is.
It's my brand.
Yeah.
I'm not loyal to any specific team in the NBA. I just go where my heart takes me.
Drake 2.0.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Took a page out of his book with this one. All right. Three biggest stories out of the Mariners weekend series, plus why the team should not trade Mitch Haniger. It's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Oh, so much to get to from the Mariners series over the weekend. Let's start with this one. Jared Kelnick, top prospect, 3 hits, 1 in each game. Better start for him. I mean, yes, in his original debut, did he have a fantastic, what was it, his second or third game when he went off?
Yeah, like 3 for 4.
It was unreal. And we were like, wow, the future is now. Is a World Series going to happen this year? I don't know. And obviously it did not. He obviously went on a really long streak without getting a hit. Well, turn that around. It was a more quiet debut for Jared Kelnick coming out of that All-Star break, and I think he's got plenty to be proud of in this start. Seems to have at least been a little more consistent.
Yeah, I mean, look, the expectation for Jared Kelnick, I think, has changed also. The first time around, he was desired to be the savior of this lineup because they were so putrid at the time, and there was a lot of pressure. I mean, they put him at the top of the lineup. Here we go. Let's figure out who this kid's going to be. And he struggled in that role. I mean, also the height of the sticky stuff with when it comes to the, you know, pitchers. So I think, you know, from a confidence building standpoint, you could look back at that and say, yeah, I mean, everybody was cheating at that time. That's why it didn't hit so well. But no, all jokes aside, I mean, he went through a major hitless streak. Everyone was starting to get concerned about him. They send him down. He comes back. And, yeah, he doesn't hit a home run. He doesn't hit a double. He hits 3 singles. But he's got a 3-game hitting streak going on. And
that's,
I think,
something.
That's confidence building, no matter in what form it comes. And I hope that that's what we see from Jared Kelnick to finish out this year, is a much higher on-base percentage, and to see that average, you know, really, really climb.
Well, and what's nice is this time around, because you have a great performance, a great June and July from J.P. Crawford. You've got Seager, France, Haniger continuing to be great. Luis Torrens, who hit his 10th home run.
Oh, my gosh.
There's not as much pressure on Kelnick to do something. You're no longer turning to a newly 22-year-old to be like the savior of your lineup.
Can I tell you something else that gets me nervous?
It really grinds your gears?
No, not grinds my gears, but gets me nervous. Okay. Is seeing a 3-catcher rotation going on, and to see Luis Torrens' back get so hot.
Oh, you think, Curtis, he's going to be traded?
Do you think that they'll flip him? Like that,
Curtis,
to me,
says he's got too much
pop.
You
don't flip Johnny Bench, okay?
I'm really
sick
hope.
And tired of the Mariners having too many good players on this roster. That's basically what we're saying if they trade Luis Torrens.
Exactly. I don't see that, especially in the future. This guy was a part of your trade for Austin Nola. Why? Because he could be a bat of the future, not to be another trade piece down the road. So that, I think, will get figured out along the way. But It's been really awesome to see him, his bat come alive. You know, we don't talk enough about Ty France and how consistent that guy has been. Absolutely outstanding. So it's been a lot of fun to see that those bats come alive, along with Mitch Haniger, Stacey, who, you know, has had an amazing series.
Speaking of Mitch Haniger, named AL Player of the Week. Congratulations to him. Had a stellar weekend, 5 for 11, two home runs. On Friday, he really went off, 3 for 5, two RBI and a home run, but had 4 RBI on Saturday and then was 1 for 3, accounted for 3 of 7 runs on Sunday. A fantastic weekend for Mitch, which has led Jake to think over some of the early season feelings he had about potentially trading Haniger, and now going back on it. You're saying, never mind. Actually, keep Haniger. Please don't trade him.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on don't trade Haniger for the past couple months. I mean, very, very strongly. But yeah, at the beginning of the year, I was thinking very cold-blooded. And I was also thinking about how seamless this will be. Oh, we got Julio. We've got, you know, Jake Fraley. We've got Jared Kelnick. We've got Kyle Lewis. We've got too many guys in the outfield. There's just not enough room for Mitch Haniger. And as we've seen, you know, plans oftentimes, they don't necessarily go according to plan. So I think with Mitch Haniger, he is the perfect stopgap player for the end of this year. And if at worst case, he just plays through the remainder of his contract next year, I think that's going to be okay. I actually think it'll be a positive thing to have him around for this team. He means a lot to this clubhouse right now in terms of what they're doing and how competitive they are. If you're going to trade him, man, DePoto, you better get back very, very good return for Mitch Haniger. And I think if he continues to play like this through July up to the trade deadline, there's going to be a couple interesting trade offers that are dangled in front of DePoto, and we'll see if he takes the bait or not.
From the lineup to the rotation, let's talk starting pitching because there was plenty to take out of this weekend, good and bad. You've got Logan Gilbert, fans 9 Sunday. Flexen struck out 8 on Friday. A fantastic weekend for the two of them, who, like we joked about in headlines, have been your two most consistent guys in July. The problem? You're all star, your single all-star for your team got shelled and has now had two poor outings. Now, I know that Mike Salk mentioned this. You're now wondering, well, was it Kikuchi's earlier part of the season that was the aberration, that something you might not see, or is this falling more back to the norm? I tend to think this is just two poor outings until we see more from him. And what I will say, that outing he had against the Yankees, which he turned around, the last three innings of that five-inning outing were fine. Mm-hmm. Like, he gave up quite a few runs in the first two and then kind of was able to rein it in, to calm everything down, to turn it around and have three clean innings. I actually think that's progression.
Yeah, that is progression, but then you'd like to see that progression followed up by a solid outing against the Angels, and it was anything but, right? So I'm not going to over panic on this. I'm not going to sit here and get overreactionary when it comes to Yusei. I think that he has earned the right to be a little bit more patient with him and to see how the next couple starts go. And I hope that we'll see Kikuchi have a bounce back performance and that he'll get back to more of the player that he has been, the all-star caliber player that he has been for this team thus far. Because if not, that regression would really, really stink for this team. I mean, you feel like now you're just starting to have a rotation that's somewhat solidifying with Logan Gilbert's emergence. All of a sudden, Chris Flexen comes out of left field. Then you have Yusei Kikuchi finally live up to that promise. Okay, well, now you don't need to spend as much money heading into the offseason as you originally maybe would have thought for this team. If Yusei falls off, now that contract extension or that option that we all thought was a no-brainer gets put in question, and now this team's resources have to be more on starting pitching than you originally planned, which takes away from your lineup. That would stink.
Here's what Scott Servais had to say about Seattle's all-star.
It's not what we're used to seeing out of Yusei. He's been so good in the first half. He'll get back there. No problem with that. I feel very confident in that. But tonight he struggled. They were on him. You know, they hit the ball hard. It wasn't like he was walking guys. He wasn't really behind in the count. They were very aggressive on fastballs down in the zone, and they didn't miss it.
So again, some faith that he'll turn this around. He did have great things to say about Logan Gilbert. I liked his quote, and I'm paraphrasing it, but he said, "I don't even look at Logan like a rookie anymore." That's high praise from, I know the skipper is going to always say good things about his team publicly, but I think what Logan Gilbert has been able to do is surpass a lot of people's expectations of what he could do in a rookie season, even potentially the guys within this organization who I'm sure expected great things from him, but he has made the future questions about who do you have at the top of your rotation a little bit easier if he ends up meeting that ceiling more consistently.
100%. I mean, if he continues to keep going down this road of consistent performances like he's had the last two outings, I mean, it puts your organization in an incredible spot. And for a long time, Logan Gilbert, as a prospect, was pegged as a guy that will be towards the top of your rotation, but not necessarily an ace. And what he has shown is ace-level ability, and that is an awesome development. Obviously, we have to wait and see how he continues to play through July, August, and September, but great promise from him right now, great confidence that we're seeing from Logan Gilbert, and one of the things that I loved more than anything, the 9 strikeouts were great, a career high for him, another new career high, but the fact that he got in some tough situations, got into some jams, and was able to get out of them was huge to me as I watch him, because those are things that you look at. It's not just the dominant stuff. It's the confidence to be able to get yourself out of jams and tough situations that really, truly make an ace-level pitcher, and he passed the test against the Angels yesterday.
All right, don't miss a minute of the Kraken expansion draft with 710 ESPN Seattle. Join Bob Stelton, Mike Salk, and our NHL insider John Morosi for live pick-by-pick analysis as the Kraken officially come to life. Listen this Wednesday from 5 to 7 p.m. on 710 ESPN Seattle. Guys, you've got questions and we've got answers. It's time. Get your questions in now for What I Need to Know. Seahawks, Mariners, Kraken, anything, whatever it is, text it now to 710-710. Your questions right around the corner.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get your questions in to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. We'll start with this one because it's prompted a debate during the break. Please end this debate. If I ask, what are you doing next weekend? Am I talking about this upcoming weekend or the following weekend? So if it is today on Monday and I say, hey, what are you doing next weekend? I mean next weekend, not this upcoming weekend.
So the following weekend.
When I say, what are you guys doing next weekend? What I mean is, what are you doing July 24th? Or no, July 31st.
Yeah, see, you can't even get your story straight,
Stacey. It's because I forgot what day it was.
Okay, so you're talking about the 31st.
I say this weekend. This weekend is this weekend.
No, I would say
next weekend is next weekend.
No, next weekend is the coming weekend. No. So if we're talking about it on a Monday, the context matters. If you're talking about it at the beginning of the week, it is the Saturday or the weekend that is coming. If you're talking about it at the end of the week, you already are heading into the weekend, so you're talking about the following weekend. You follow?
You're wrong. I mean,
it's once you hit Wednesday.
No.
Anything before Wednesday, if you say next weekend, it means the one that's upcoming.
That's absolutely incorrect. If I say next weekend, I don't mean this weekend. Once you are past Sunday, when you are past the weekend, it is no. This weekend is the weekend that is that week.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
It is not.
I am right. Oh, God.
You're not, though. It is. It's
from
very
the 425.
Clear.
Good point, Jake, but Stacy is right.
Stacy, because one person says that does not mean that you
are
correct.
Sorry, guys, but Stacy is right. Rost is correct.
Nope.
Jake, you're wrong. Sorry. The people are on my side, Jake.
Nope.
I'm preaching the truth.
This is crazy talk.
What I need to know, what
crazy
part of the Seahawks
talk
are you least worried about? I'd go with punter. Quarterback, top wide receivers, left tackle, basically the starters that you're paying all the money to. I feel good about those guys, which is a good thing. I don't feel like the Seahawks have thrown money at a problem that isn't fixing itself. Like, your highest paid players are the ones I feel pretty confident about.
Right. Yeah, I feel really good about that as well. Now, the one thing that we do need to see is when you talk about Bobby Wagner, you talk about Jamal Adams, we need to see that impact level of play really come through on that defense and for those guys to take the next step this year, right? Year two, as you establish Jamal Adams, as you get this crew coming in, they've got to be better, significantly better than what they were a year ago. That's what I'll be judging those guys off of, is the level of play that this defense has. In regards to this offense, I think that when you look at this team, they've got all the makings to be an elite level offense this year. And I will be very disappointed if they don't meet that. Doesn't mean they have to be that right out of the gate. I expect that it will be pretty seamless in terms of the transition that they make. But I do expect them to be an elite offense, a top 10, top 5 level offense.
What I need to know, first of all, so many people are texting in saying, I hate that I'm saying this, but I agree with Stacey. When did I become the bad guy? What?
I don't know. Curtis and I are just incredibly likable, I guess.
I think you know.
If the past 2 years have taught me anything, it's that I'm incredibly unlikable.
That's not true.
Take it back, Ross.
I said what I said. What I need to know. Does Logan Gilbert, now we've done a version of this question before, but our answers might have changed. What I need to know, 2 weeks after we did this question, does Logan Gilbert start if the Mariners play into a wild card game?
Yes.
If the Mariners wild card game is tomorrow,
yes.
Does Logan Gilbert start? Well, I guess it's
a week from now. My answer was yes that day.
And it remains yes. My answer was no, and I've changed it.
Mm. Here's the thing. Kikuchi, I think, has the opportunity to come in and hopefully reestablish himself, but when it comes down to a clutch level performance, I don't know. There's been some things there that have happened along the way with Kikuchi that I don't necessarily have the utmost confidence. I'm going into that day, into that scenario, with a ton of nerves. Is Yusei going to be on it or not? Is he going to have the confidence in himself to pull it out? Whereas Logan Gilbert, so far from what we've seen, even in his first couple outings when he got shelled, he never looked rattled, you know? It was more of just like, oh, okay, well, I got stuff to learn. Okay, I'm in the bigs now. This is what I got to do. I've got to fix this and this. And that's the way that he's operated. He's been an absolute machine that way in terms of learning from his mistakes. And from a football perspective, we've called it being a fixer, right? How quick can you fix the problems that you have from 1 week to the next, from one day to the next? And those are usually the guys that rise to the top. And Logan Gilbert seems to be an elite level fixer.
Someone is defending you and Curtis by saying, when you see an exit sign on the freeway and it says next exit, it's always the immediate exit following.
Thank you.
Never talking about the second exit.
It's true.
You're still wrong.
Slam the gavel down.
No, you're still wrong. If I say, what are you doing next weekend? Not this weekend.
Yeah, if you're talking to me today on a Monday, I'm going to think this upcoming weekend.
Oh, God. Oh, geez. What I need to know, what kind of trade proposals do you guys see all the time?
Bad ones. Let's be honest.
What's a Mariners trade proposal? What are a couple trade proposals you've seen?
I've seen people say just the most ridiculous stuff.
I'll say
Justus Sheffield and Rafael Montero and
For Carlos Correa.
Yeah, exactly. Like, trades don't work when you hand over all of your garbage in hopes of landing a star. That's not how it works.
That garbage could be really, really good.
You have to give up something of value, but not when people know it isn't garbage.
All puns intended when it comes to the Astros.
Oh my gosh. When
people know that. Like, I think I see a lot of that. I see a lot
it's like prestige worldwide. That's from Step Brothers. It could be you. Yeah, we're going to sell you this trash. I think that's the funny part about this is that from a Mariners perspective, especially when you're going after star-level talent, you more so than anybody else, okay, because of the place that you're in and everybody knowing that you're in a rebuilding situation, you're most likely to have to give up way more than other established organizations. It's just the truth. It's just the truth of the situation. So if you think that you're going to pull off a coup of a deal and Mitch Haniger is going to get you in return some other star, I'm sorry, that's not going to be enough. It's going to be Mitch Haniger plus a couple other nice pieces to go along with that. It's going to be a bigger trade than just a one-off.
I'm going to end with this final question. We don't have time to answer, but just to throw it out there. When Stacey and Brian get married, will Jake be the officiant? Will the wedding be at Cape Canaveral? And is there a tux big enough for Wyman?
All great questions, first of all.
Destination wedding.
I love how many people start talking about Brian.
Well,
Stacey's very real boyfriend, Brian.
I will just say, I have officiated a wedding. That is not a hypothetical scenario.
No, you've been putting your services out there for people. So far, no one's texted in to take you up on it.
Katie and Vince Medina, you could give them a call and they could be my reference. I promise they'll come through for me.
If you guys need Jake to officiate your wedding, and this is a real offer, 710-710 at JT Heaps 9.
I mean,
my guy.
He just asked for like cake and a plate of food at
the
buffet.
That's it. That's the payment. That's all he needs.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. Okay. If I have to travel, there might be some other stipulations
okay.
in there. But,
okay.
but hey, it'll be good.
All right. That'll do it for us today. For Jake Heaps, for Curtis Rogers, I'm Stacey Ross. Thanks so much for listening to Jake and Stacey. And don't go anywhere because Wyman and Bob's coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Don't suffer through the heat. Get on the phone and call my friends at Allred Heating and Cooling. Don't take my phone.